broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
Ruben is out today. I cannot remember what it is that he is doing. Hopefully it's something fun, but it might be medical. I don't know. But I am here today taking over. And just a reminder that you can call in at any point, 650-560-9851. And I am here with a super fantastic local Linda Galindo, who, if you have not heard that name, I hope that by the end of this you are looking her up. And she is fantastic, and she is an accountability coach. And that is one of my favorite things, is accountability and being coached. And so I look forward to our conversation. And then at 9:30, we'll get the buzz report from our most favorite, Michelle Dragony. And and until then, she is listening to the Coastside Emergency Action Program meeting. So thank you for doing double duty, Michelle, and all your good things. And with that, may I say good morning, Linda.
Good morning, and good morning, Coastside. I am, in fact, all about accountability.
Which I say is one of my favorite things, because it's something that I have worked on over the last couple of years in particular. Can you let us know, for those who think they know what accountability is, what is it that an accountability coach does, and how do you help people with the true understanding of accountability?
Well, let's start with, how in the world does someone make their life about accountability? And it started for me because of the lack of understanding about what accountability was. And here's how that clarity hit me. My very first life was in radio. I mean, Linda Galindo, who's going to waste that name on something other than doing radio? So I always wanted to do broadcast journalism. And so that's what I went to school to study. And I had a natural talent for it. And as you can tell from my voice, I had a voice for radio. But I got into the news, broadcast journalism, and deep into it, something pretty dramatic changed. And what changed was something I didn't understand, but when you are a radio morning drive news person, which was my whole world, that you are paid because sponsors buy commercial time on the radio. So I'm getting deep into my career, and I'm about to move to the next station, bigger market. But what changed was that the sales department got to say whether or not you could do a story or not based on whether the advertiser was on your station.
Oh, that sounds dirty.
Yeah, that was not good. I had a bad feeling when they said, you got to pull that story. And then getting into why, my whole world changed. It's like, they advertise, that's how you're paid. I got a little lesson in that whole thing. And so I had to make a decision to stay in there. But that entire time that I was on air and doing news, I started to notice something sort of nipping at the edges. And that was that when leaders were involved in a story, and things worked, they had zero problem understanding accountability. None at all. I did that, my company, here's my book, I'm it. And when it didn't work, suddenly they were very foggy and confused. Why are you asking me? How can I know what 100,000 employees are doing? I'm not an accountant, I don't know if... And it went on and on, and I thought that was pretty striking. But then the real blow came when I realized that not being accountable was starting to get rewarded more than being accountable.
Oh.
So it all sort of was jumbling around in there, and when this this new thing happened to say, hey, we're going to dictate what you can and can't do on air for a commercial station, I decided to leave. And when my mom said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to think about and write, and actually I'm going to open a consulting firm, and I'm going to teach accountability to executives. And she's very quiet for a minute and said, don't think you're moving home if that doesn't work. So this is now 3 books later, all of my materials published, my website is my name, lindagalindo.com, and it's because people say, I want people around me to be more accountable. So yeah, to your point, so what is accountability? It's a change in how you think about the ownership for your results. And it is to start with that instead of come at the end with that and answering for it. So there are 2 words in that equation. One is responsibility. The other is accountability. Accountability usually comes at the end. What I do is put it up front. Do you own this fully before you go ahead with what you're doing? And what I have to interrupt with a lot of people's thinking when I get into their organizations, the leaders want me to come in and teach the concept. They have to have the transformation in their thinking first. But what it is, you know, it's easy to do ownership for results when they're good. But,
yes.
But the whole thing is, don't change the definition of accountability, whether it's working or not working. Keep it exactly the same. And then there's this unconscious, unintentional behavior on the part of people to say, I'm very accountable, but when something isn't working and they jump in to fix it rather than hold someone accountable, the thought process is something along the lines of, it's just easier to do it myself than have the conflict of holding someone accountable or slowing down to explain so that they can learn and be accountable. It's just easier to do it myself. Rewards not performing.
Yes.
And it treats people like they're not capable.
Well, and then something that I see often through my job with the Chamber, I'm working with so many other companies, and I get so frustrated when I see people in a, you know, group where there's, you know, 20, you know, some employees or whatever, and then you've got high performers that are doing the job and doing the work, and they're passionate about what it is that they're doing, but then they get disgruntled because there's these employees on the lower end that are skating by, that management isn't holding them accountable for the work that they do or the output that they create. And then you end up with these top performers that are so pissed off that they start becoming your worst performers, because not only are they not performing at their peak, but now they are being spiteful because they're so angry that low performers aren't being held accountable.
That so well put, and it's a lot of head nodding when I'm doing a keynote and I say, you know, not holding people accountable punishes your best performers because they get the work of the underperformer. And that whole idea of giving people chances and you know, how long do I wait before I hold someone accountable? The next part of that is everybody needs more resources, but what they are doing is hiring around the underperformers. The other mistake is bringing everybody in and saying, we've got to step it up. You need to make sure. And everybody, the high performers are looking at each other going, we've been in this meeting 8 times because you don't want to hold the 2 people that are the problem accountable and have the conversation with them directly. And we're over that. So my number one retention problem is exactly what you just stated. Go into the organization, work with the leadership group, and look at those people that they have allowed to not perform in exchange for being liked. It's just easier to do it myself. I don't like conflict. All those things happen. And so what is accountability? How do you teach it? It starts at the top, always at the top, or the team lead or whoever's in charge to say, you want your people to be more accountable, you're the problem.
And one of the things that you also just mentioned is a leadership that doesn't want to have that conversation with the poor performer, oh, I don't like conflict. Having a conversation with an underperformer, in my opinion, is not a conflict to be had. It's a conversation. you need to let them know that you see that they are not doing what they need to do, because then as time goes on, you can start holding them accountable. If you haven't held them accountable before, you have to put a line in the sand and say, okay, from here forward, this is the measurable, this is what I need to see, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then you can, if they continue to underperform, because that might just be who they are, then you at least have something to go with. But I get really annoyed when somebody's like, well, I'm conflict averse and I can't have uncomfortable conversations. Don't be in leadership if you can't have uncomfortable conversations.
Amen. Amen. You know, and there are people that choose being liked over being effective. And I will say over and over again, it is demeaning to treat someone like they cannot handle a conversation. And you do have to set the new line to say, the leadership in organizations I work in do this all the time. They say, we've got to reset the line. And I'll say, talk to me about how you got here to begin with. It's not that you don't know how to hold people accountable. It is that you know there's a downside to doing it. But let's talk about this. How did you get here? And that conversation starts with, I allowed this to happen, and I need to stop. So if I came to you and I said, look, I need to have this conversation, but before I do that, I can see where I've avoided this conversation. It's a conversation I needed to have that I wasn't having. But at the end of the day, it was because I wanted to be liked more than I wanted to be effective. And it's affecting more than just me and you now. It's affecting all of this around us. So I am now going to tell you that I take ownership how we got here. But here's how it's going to be going forward. Mm-hmm. If you just land on them all of a sudden with a new understanding of accountability, which is what I bring them through first, then it is rather shocking. Sometimes in leadership when I'm working with them, they decide on their own that if this is where the CEO or the top of the organization is going, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here. My cover is no longer, and this is not for me. So it is an education, not a training. I do not train accountability. I think that's demeaning to say, you're an executive and you need to be trained in what accountability is. It's educating you to what it is so you can't unsee it. Mm-hmm. And then it's a choice. I am going to hold you accountable. I am going to be accountable, or I'm not. Frankly, I could care less which you choose. But you can see what the end point's going to be based on the choice. And it's easy for people to make other people the problem. Mm-hmm. Once they understand accountability, I'm choosing now. And so which thing do you want? And perpetuate this or change it?
Yeah. Which I love so much. And I had mentioned earlier, this is something that I personally have been working on, because I think, you know, when I took over as the chamber executive, you know, I inherited employees, and then as time went on, you know, newer employees came in, and I had the same thing where it was like, I didn't hold people accountable for their work, and it bit me right in the butt so hard. And I ended up, in two cases, having an employee for a year that they made my work life miserable because I was constantly having to make excuses for why they weren't meeting goals or why they were behaving badly. And I was so worried about having this reputation of, oh, she came into the chamber and now her turnover rate is too high. Like, people are being hired and quitting or whatever. And I was so worried about what that would look like from the outside that I was allowing these terrible employees to hang around and take advantage of things. And then I finally got fed up and really thought it through and decided that my mental well-being was more important, and really internally took the lesson of slow to hire, so find that good fit, but then quick to fire. When somebody has shown you that they're not going to be a good employee, and you've done appropriate steps to work with them, right? Because, you know, some things might be growing pains or whatever, but that you've done an appropriate amount of trying to make it work, but then it's just clearly not going to work, let them go. It's the better thing for both of you and the organization. And I got to say, now, I will claim it, I have the best staff team member, Stephanie, in the entire CoSat. I mean, I just couldn't do it without her. She's so awesome. And but that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't really taken a look at how I was allowing the company to be treated as well as myself to be treated.
So look what accountability does for an organization. And this is 100% of my work now is by referral, because I've got, you know, an entrepreneurial CEO who then moves to the next place, or a VP that is now in another organization who says, come and do this again with this new team. Get them oriented to what accountability does. And accountability, defined as ownership for results, good or bad, without fault, blame, or guilt. So instead of finger pointing and blaming, you get, this is what I did, here's what I learned, here's what I'll do differently, here's how I am accountable on the part of each team member. If you get that, then you get low stress, you get productivity, you get job satisfaction, you get actual teamwork. So a way to, if you're listening, decide, you know, is this for you? Is this something I would explore to see if I change, everything around me has no choice? And you use the word, you know, what I allow, and that I would stop doing that. Well, let's put it in a way you can decide if it would be good for you. Let's say, and I never want this to happen to anyone, but you're the person who goes into a surgical suite because you're the person on the table. You're the patient. And before they put you under anesthesia, you got to ask everyone who was going to touch you, on a scale of 0 to 100% in your role, how much personal accountability are you taking for this being a good outcome, this surgery you're going to do on me being a good outcome. You have 0 to 100% to work with, and I'm going to ask each of you before you put me under. What answer do you want from everybody who's going to touch you?
175%.
No, you don't want 175% because that person is rescue, fixing, and saving the underperformer.
There
you want,
go.
For my role, 100. However, the change to get it in the culture then moves to that you don't want the answer for my part, 100%, because the surgeon and the anesthesiologist don't get along. And I've been told, you know, when I've said, hey, I'm looking at the chart, that's the wrong knee, to never correct the surgeon in front of others. And I get pulled in the hallway for trying to have a conversation about what they told us is expected and what's actually happening. Hey, you didn't use the checklist. Don't correct me. So they'll say to you, for my part, 100%. When you want that team and you want it embedded in the culture, it's individual and collective at the same time, so that we hold each other accountable. And if that's the agreement that we put in play in the culture, that the executives hold each other accountable instead of that hierarchical accountability, then you have low stress, productivity, job satisfaction, because we all see it's all interrelated and interdependent for real. Most of the time when I go in and they say, yeah, we need to do team building, I have to start where people are, because there's mindset. Yes, I'm accountable as long as I get the resources I need. These people talk to me nicely. I have, I have a path in my career. All these externals, and you said this word that made me almost jump across at you, to say, I inherited a group of people. You did not. You accepted a role with a group of people you don't know yet, that you are now going to, you know, get to the place where they are personally accountable. But you have to start where they are. When they say, come in and work with my team, and I'm in there 20 minutes, and I'm thinking, if this is a team, I'm an astronaut. It's not even close. So first thing is an assessment. That's what I do, an assessment of the mindset. And then I say, okay, where are we starting from? And actually, some groups that I'm going to go into don't even clear the bar to start with them, because the leader has zero intention of applying what we're going to talk about to themselves. So you used all the magic words. I've been allowing this. I need to stop. I own this when it goes wrong. But all those ownership moments are learning, or they're finger pointing and blaming. Mm-hmm. What do you get out of being accountable? Low stress, productivity, job satisfaction. That's high performance. And less need to manage. So people become autonomous, self-empowered, and understand the difference between authority and empowerment. And in the assessment I do, this never ceases to amaze me. One of the items I ask is, I'm totally clear about the authority I have to do my job. And someone will put strongly disagree or disagree. And I'll ask them in the one-on-one coaching, so how long have you been here? 10 years. How long have you been unclear about your authority? 10 years. Why don't you ask and get clear? Well, I don't want the authority, then I'm accountable. I don't want it to land on me. Why would I get paid for, you know, getting out of that? So it, and when they have the waking up to say, look, I want 100-0 on the part of everybody giving me a service, especially if it's a service, like life or death service, then where am I? Why am I expecting of someone that I'm not living myself? That's ridiculous.
Yes.
So that mindset changes the whole ballgame.
Well, and one of the other things that I have found as a really, really positive turn of events in working on my accountability is the unexpected consequence of receiving more compassion from the person on the other side of the accountability. So instead of, if I've had a project that has gone woefully behind or anything like that, and in the past I might have tried to come up with excuses for why I wasn't doing it or kind of hiding or moving the ball, then I would have this internal stress of if they're going to find out and, you know, quote, like, what? At what point am I having the line of lying and all of these things? And then once I really started getting straight up with people and being like, I'm late on this thing because, you know, XYZ circumstance, I'm so sorry, I fully take ownership of it being late, this and that. And seriously, 9.75% of the, or out of 10, the response that I get back is, it's okay. That's no problem. How can I help you? Or how can we make this better? Or, just compassion. Compassion from the other side, acknowledging that we're human at the end of the day. And so that was my most favorite part of accountability, was the way that it lowered my stress both internally but also externally.
You're describing a tool we use that's super important, which is looking back to go forward. So when someone's going to report ownership for something that did not work, there's a way to do it. So exactly what you're talking about is the foundation of it. It's empathy and it's going forward. So it's, I understand, but do you? So the individual who does the looking back, here's what I did, here's what I learned, here's what I'll do differently, here's how I am accountable. They're starting there, but I have the leader do that first. Let me show you how this works in our staff meeting. When something did not go well for me at that level, and showing their direct reports or their peers when we do team, that what we want to do is look back and learn. You know you're going to have a very expensive organization to run when something goes wrong and the first thing you hear is finger pointing and blame. If you hear reasons and learning, you're going to be super investable. For entrepreneurs out there, that's the number one thing I teach the entrepreneur leadership team. You have to learn how to present what went wrong, your cash burn's higher than you thought it was going to be, how everybody reports what they're learning, not excuses and blame for why they didn't hit the mark and they need, you know, they need to dip even further into the funding. And so it's been a fascinating opportunity to go into these startups or mergers and acquisitions, do the assessment and see where the mindsets are, because you can actually equate that to whether or not they're going to use their cash wisely, whether they're going to answer for mistakes and the jargon of fail fast. But no, fail fast, fine. But what did you learn? Mm-hmm. That's all been jargony. Accountability brings it home. It's a steep climb. And the ones that are scoring on the assessment where they need to be, they don't say, okay, I've made it. It is, how do I pass this on? So the number one call I get, how do I make them accountable? My answer is always the same. You don't. What you do is you teach what it is so they can choose whether they're going to be accountable or not. Well, HR, whenever I hold them accountable, they run to HR and they say that I'm being unfair. And I say, okay, hold on. What does HR tell you? They want documentation. What they're telling you is, please follow the process we have in place and be accountable to that first. And then we can get this back into the culture, because there's always process for that. This is a whole different layer of it that you can put in place today.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love all of this so much. It's one of my favorite things is trying to wrap my head around how other people think. So I feel like in your job, in doing this, you just must come across brains that are so interesting. Like, when somebody is trying to think through an issue, and however they get to whatever their, you know, end result is, do you just find it, like, so interesting to run across these brains that you're like, how are you wired this way? And then finding that perfect way to communicate with them to get your point across, but, like, you must have to have 1,000 different ways to do it.
It's interesting because beliefs, attitudes, thoughts precede action, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can figure out how someone believes about accountability and responsibility going in, you can start to unwrap that to say that's not necessarily working. So a rocket scientist, a thoracic surgeon, engineers, product development people, social workers, you name it, all come from their lens, their beliefs, their attitudes, their thoughts about accountability. So it's incredibly random. You can have staff levels scoring higher in their level of ownership than the boss. And it's because of how their lens, their beliefs, their attitudes and thoughts that they are completely unaware of are driving their how they're going to behave around accountability. Some have it as very consequential and horrible, and some have it as one of the best skills I have, and I know how to do it in a way that people want to come along. So I have realized that very, very smart people, when I'm working with a group of scientists or surgeons or whatever it is, that smart and educated doesn't necessarily equate to their level of accountability and understanding of it, and oftentimes it starts a short circuit in a way, but not anything the person they live with hasn't told them. You know,
yeah.
It's like when I do my coaching, executive coaching, I'll say, look, this is about you being so impatient and dismissive of people. They have no desire to learn something about accountability. You're the problem. And they'll look at me and ask me, first of all, you can tell all of that from the SOLA assessment I took. I said, yes. Why are you surprised? It's because my spouse has been telling me this for years, and I said, then why am I here? You could get executive coaching for free at home.
Well, and that was actually one of the things that popped into my head in the very first thing that you said this morning is when you were explaining the difference of the accountability. And I'm thinking, like, oh, in a nutshell, it's when somebody says, when the dog or the child or whoever is doing something at home is doing it good, they're our dog, they're our child. But the second that dog or child gets in trouble, that's their dog, their child.
And that's your team member. It's like, well, hold on. And the thing that gives me so much energy about this is, yeah, people get excited about it, and in 10 minutes of a keynote, I can see the audience poking each other. This, she's talking to you, she's talking to you. And it is, no, once you really do understand it, you do get excited about it to the point you're probably annoying to others. You need this. And I always say, leave them alone. If you change, everything around you has no choice. So the very first chapter of the book, The 85% Solution, which is the primer for the whole philosophy of this, the very first chapter is Queen of Victims. I had the reason, the excuse, the story for everything that was not going well until someone said to me, you're always there when these things happen. Have you noticed? Actually, it was my best friend who I immediately terminated as a friend after that comment. And then a year later, you know, grew back into, you know what? That thought never left me, that I am accountable, not at fault, not to blame. There's a reason, and I can learn from this. If I go into excuse and blame, okay, but nothing moves. Zero moves.
And with that, we will head out to commercial and we'll come back with the Buzz Report. And after we hear from the wonderful Michelle, we'll dive back into the awesome Linda Galindo and speak more about the book. Thank you.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side. 100.9 KHMB. Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant, Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the Coast Side, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday. And karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant, Pub and Inn in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Join me this morning at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. I'll be along with Stan Warren Luttrell getting a check of your weather. Also, we'll take a look at today in history. And don't forget our forgotten find. All comes your way right after Coastal Windage on your Friday morning from 100.9 FM KHMB.
It's time to find out what's buzzing on the Coast Side. And here with all the latest is Michelle Dragony.
Hello, Crystalyn and Linda, and happy weekend, Coast Siders. Welcome to the KHMB Weekly Coast Side Buzz Report for the week ending Friday, November 31st, 2024. The Dignity Health Medical Group has expanded the Half Moon Bay Clinic to offer urgent care services on Main Street. Well, it's just off Main Street opposite Pasta Moon. Please fill out the survey to show that we will, to show that we love this idea. If we don't show interest, we will lose this once-in-a-generation opportunity. And share the survey, please. It's in both English and in Spanish. The 880 Stone Pine Cove Farmworker Housing Initial Study Mitigated Negative Declaration was approved by the Half Moon Bay Planning Commission with concerns for the possible inundation by the Pilarcitos Dam. Included in the post is a Coastside County Water District presentation by the SFPUC, which was done earlier this year. They are the keepers of Crystal Springs and our water. They said that the California Division of Dams asked that they draw down the water behind the dam by one-third. Old dams are an underfunded problem nationwide, and in California, they became aware of this problem after the Oroville Dam failed, and now all dams in California are to be inspected and upgraded. The Sewer Authority Mid-Coastside tabled their five-year infrastructure rolling plan, which is not a budget, by the way. It's just a plan. With a 50-year maintenance project on the horizon, there are possible rate increase ramifications so that they are looking at asset inventory analysis so they can plan accordingly. The San Mateo County Harbor District had an update on WERDA 2024, which is also known as the Water Resources Development Act for the Pillar Point Sea Level Rise and Princeton-by-the-Sea Shoreline Project. To get this going, Anna Eshoo helped. There will be multi-jurisdictional cooperation, and the Army Corps of Engineers will be doing most of the funding. There's also a planned Princeton meeting today at 11 o'clock at Ray Mueller's, our supervisor's office, at the Oceano Shop. The Cabrillo Unified School District has appointed an interim superintendent. His name is Jeff Harding. The currently hired superintendent, Amber Lee Alva, is on medical leave for the next 5 months. The San Mateo County Farm Bureau is appealing LASCO's approval for the annexation of the CSA 11 water system to include Pescadero High School and the new fire station number 59. The appeal document is in the post. There are six things that they are appealing about. Stay tuned to see how this is resolved. The main thing is to get potable water to the Pescadero students who have been drinking out of plastic bottles for 40 years. Brigitte Bauer started a Bring Back the Story Poll petition. I love advocacy. Citizen advocacy, go. The Midcoast Design Review Committee recently discussed the efficacy, cost, and logistics of story polls. Have a listen. Would you like to see when a new development or house in your neighborhood is going to be built? Would you prefer to look at story polls or a picture on a flyer? Fill out the petition if you have an opinion. The 2024 recreational Dungeness crab season will open this weekend with trap restrictions, while the commercial Dungeness crab fishery is delayed to protect whales from entanglement. Next weekend, I will be covering a possible solution that is the latest on pop-up crab traps. There's an app for that. Half Moon Bay Pumpkin Bots. The high school pumpkin team has expanded with the Boys and the Girls Club of the Coastside to support and include Cunha's Coastside Circuits Bots Club. And with further support, there are plans to add elementary students in the next couple of years. If you would like to donate, or if you want to mentor these future entrepreneurs, hit the post for the link. Puente raised $440,000 for renovations at their new Pescadero North Street property for affordable, safe, and dignified farmworker housing. They did that with a farm dinner. Go Puente! Watch the Humble Bumblebee, which is a webinar presented by the Coastside Land Trust with biologist and steward scientist Sheena Sidhu. Buzz, buzz! The Coastside Buzz calendar has lots of events to check out and peruse the Coast View's Music Entertainment Guide. All of the music and entertainment from Pescadero to Pacifica and in between every week all in one place. On the event calendar for Buzz this week, we have the History Association of Pacifica and National Park Service Ranger hosting the Cortola Expedition Discovery of the San Francisco Bay. Also, plan to attend the Coastal Commission appeals for the Caltrans Highway 1 multi-asset project at Surfers Beach for their parking and Half Moon Bay for crosswalks at Poplar and Kelly. That will be in 2 weeks. Sign up for Reach for the Stars 2024 fundraiser for the Boys and the Girls Club of the Coastside. Dinner, dancing, and lots of fun at the Ritz. Want to know more about raptors? It's raptor season right now, raptor migration season. The Coastside Land Trust hosts the Wavecrest Raptor Walk with the Sequoia Audubon Society. Check the calendar for the date and the time. Go to the Buzz calendar and explore for yourself. Subscribe for free to stay tuned to the Buzz. And for KHMB, this is Michelle Dragony with the Coastside Buzz Weekly Report.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
I hope you had a great Halloween.
Sure did.
And we'll check in with you. And if you missed, or for anybody else who wants to hear more report, you can check out the CoastsideBuzz.com. And thank you so much for everything, Michelle.
You're welcome, Crystal. And bye.
Bye.
Bye, Linda.
Bye.
And if you want to call in and ask myself or Linda a question in the next 27 minutes, 650-560-9851. And getting back to what we were chatting about, you mentioned one of the three books that you've written, the 85% Solution. And can you give us a little explainer on what that book is about and if somebody were to get it, what they would hope to get out of it?
The title is The Whole Ball Game, The 85% Solution, How Personal Accountability Guarantees Success. No nonsense, no excuses. Flew off the shelves back when I first authored it. From that, I developed the accountability experience, which is the training that someone can certify to do. And I do want to put this out there. I am looking to create a youth group of facilitators of the material. So if anybody's, you know, interested for the Boys and Girls Club or whoever, I can get them on the training for certification for that, because I just think we need accountability warriors out there.
Sure.
That are younger and entrepreneurial and want to have the certification to train the material. I say I don't do training, but it is being able to facilitate accountability in whatever they're doing.
That
so.
Might be something. Have you heard of the Hub that is a part of Cunha? Or it's on the Cunha Middle School campus, and it is a collaboration between the school, CEF, so Corinne Bucher, the Boys and Girls Club, Jill Jacobson, and ALAS. And they've got a couple of areas that it's very specific to types of workshops and trainings for young adults and parents. And that
excellent.
Might be a great
excellent.
Place for
excellent.
That.
All right, yeah, let's get, well, I'll follow up on that connection. because I'm very interested in doing that. So the 85% solution, how personal accountability guarantees success, no nonsense, no excuses. And then the next book was Way to Grow. Actually, Way to Grow came first, but doesn't really matter. Way to Grow, cultivating the weeds, daisies, and orchids in your organization. And that model, that book, is about whether you are a weed, a daisy, or an orchid. You want to grow weeds. They're the most desirable plant in the coaching vernacular that we use because they're the lowest maintenance. They score the highest on the assessment. They say, yes, I own this. I'm going to learn. Let's go forward. Low maintenance. So you want to grow weed. Daisies need coaching. Little sun, little shade, little water. Some are hybrid daisies, kind of fussy because the scientists were doing this hybrid seeding thing. And so they have a special need. Again, the assessment helps us identify. So what do you need? It's the orchid that everybody's like, I need steam. It's too hot. It's too cold. Where's my special food? Turn me to the right. I need... And everybody just gets sucked dry. That's the one that is always rescued, fixed, and saved. Career orchids find managers like a heat-seeking missile that love to rescue, fix, and save. And so when I have managers and directors map their organization, see what kind of a garden do you have? A lot of them look up and say, I'm an orchid farmer. Why are all these orchids working for me? Because you rescue, fix, and save instead of hold people accountable. And so we mentor weeds, we coach daisies, and we manage orchids. And career orchids are our problem, the ones who have figured out a way to get everybody to either pass them on or to be a year from retirement so that no one touches them, blah, blah. But showing the effect of that and just putting it in your administration costs by not dealing with these things, mm-hmm. That's part of the model. The other part of the model is back to your empathy and need for that. You have to give people what they need to thrive. And so new into an organization, you may need to be managed. You're a pretty flower, but you don't want to be passed on because we have a beautiful flower for you. Now we're going to give it to your department because we're tired of it. It's because they're learning. And I might have been a weed person. You know, I jump the cement. I grow in the crowds. I understand there are barriers, but I'm going to thrive. But I've taken on something new, and now I need coaching. So I'm going to go back to being a daisy. I need coaching. So you have mentor, coach, or manage. Which are you doing? And leaders have to really mind their time and give people what they need to thrive. Treating everyone the same is not the same as being fair. Really, really important. So Way to Grow just addresses, what if I have this? What do I do with that? And identify where you are. Very, very important. That's that one. The third one was, I can't even remember. There's another book, and then I published the training. But the book coming up, I'll remember the third one in a minute, but the one that I have coming up, the title is When the Culture Lies, How the Unaccountable Run Our Lives and What to Do About It. So When the Culture Lies, How the Unaccountable Run Our Lives and What to Do About It. That one's in process. I've changed the date again, and it's now March of 2025. It's blown through a couple of deadlines because I'm so into what I'm doing right now. And I actually have a worldwide practice. I get to do keynotes all over the world, and it's pretty fun. The third book, Where Winners Live. And Where Winners Live is mostly targeted to the financial services industry, sales. It is that gap between 85 and 100. So the 85% solution, 100%, it's really taking ownership in the gap. So I was working in financial services industries for quite a bit. My number one industry right now is healthcare. And do you know what I've learned in doing so much healthcare, whether it's the board or leadership conference or working staff development somewhere in healthcare? You want to know what I learned? Stay healthy. I mean, it is so important right now. Stay healthy, because it is, as I know everyone has a story, it's so incredibly frustrating. There are entrepreneurial ventures out there doing really good breakthrough disruptive stuff that will help us. Technology is helping us too, but wow, what all it's insurance and reimbursements and who do you go to for what? It's a lot.
That's one of the industries that when Stephanie first came on at the chamber, and I lean on this a lot. Whenever we're working on a project, the meter of all meters is whatever we are doing is nothing compared to what's happening. Like, nothing we're doing is life or death. Nobody is having adverse consequences from the projects that we do. That's always the metric because healthcare just seems so intense.
It's intense. It is intense. And I mean, top to bottom, I've been in the largest healthcare systems to the smallest to standalone clinics, et cetera. And it's under siege. It's been under siege for years. The needle has not moved much in terms of, getting something that's functional going. And it just keeps pointing back to the same thing over and over again, that, you have to take as much ownership as you possibly can to good nutrition, diet, and exercise, and it's coming down to that. And it's boring, it's not sexy, but it's really super important. And so, yeah, I get to work in public health departments. I get to work in, large hospital systems. I just go where I'm invited. But what happens? Low stress, productivity, job satisfaction. And then when that person, they tell me, you've wrecked it for me, because now I'm going to go to this next place. They're not like this. I'm going to see if I can get you in so I can work this way again, because it's not magic. It is hard work for sure. But if you switch the way you understand accountability to ownership for results, good or bad, no fault, no blame, no guilt, something happens that you can't unsee, you can't unhear, you can't undo. You're always making this choice to be accountable or to not be accountable. So one of the things you said earlier that I made a note, I love Michelle Dragony so much. I love, just in that 5 minutes, right, you're up to date with what's going on. I made some notes. I'm going to call you, Michelle. I have some questions. But this is the key thing now that I've learned. When a leader calls me and they're so frustrated because their people are not being accountable, I heard, my CEO or my VP friend or my whatever heard you, and they, I think I need what you do. The very first question I ask is, what is your role in what's not working? They're not accountable. Okay, what is your role in what's not working? And when you're in it, you can't see it. That's why you need an accountability coach. When I have the exercise trainer person that I use, I'm like in so much hell with some of the things that I'm supposed to be doing, but he can see whether I'm doing it in a way that's going to be beneficial. I'm in it. All I can hear is the noise in my body saying, please stop this. But he can see, and I trust him to do that. And it's the same with accountability. It is, what's your role in what isn't working? So the mirror is going to be your greatest tool. When your hair is squampous after a big windstorm and you come in and you look in the mirror, you don't reach into the mirror to fix it. You've got to look at yourself. So first, that if you will ask that question every time, you will get to this level of personal accountability that is almost indescribable. That's the first question a leader will ask themselves, not what are they doing that I need them to stop and fix, all right? Mm-hmm. Then the question becomes, once you're honest about that, what's the conversation I need to have that I'm not having? And there's a difference between I can't have that conversation and I'm unwilling to have that conversation. I'm unwilling to have that conversation is total personal accountability. I can't is a victim.
Mm-hmm.
The big lie often is I don't know how to have that conversation. And I'll say, you know how, because if I put you in a room and said, figure out how to have that conversation in an hour or you die, you would think of something.
Uh-huh.
It's the downside of having the conversation you're trying to figure out. How do I hold on to the thing I've got and get to the next thing and keep both of them? Reach my arm across the room to get the chair I want while I hold on to this table. I'll say, no, you got to let go of the table. It's like, no, make my arm longer. I'm not that kind of consultant. You got to make a decision to let go of something, maybe being liked and choosing being effective over being liked. and tell a truth. So what is the conversation you need to have? Then the coaching starts about how do you take ownership. It's not gimmicky. It's authentic. But it has to start with where you are, and so the willingness to do that. So oftentimes when I have employees that say, I micromanaged with an inch of my life, I hate this so much. There's no need to then I tell them, here's the thing. Ask whoever's micromanaging you. Is the problem you're having with me how I'm doing this or whether I can do this? Because now generations at work is starting to come into play. How is style? Whether you can do it is skill. So if sometimes I can't watch how someone's doing something. It's like, that is not how I would do it. I had that job for years. I've got to move on. You're taking it over. And I keep jumping back in. We have this a lot in volunteer organizations where the person who owned it for years and years and years needs to move on. They bring someone else in volunteering, and they jump all over them to say, that's not how I did it. Do it this way. And they're like, I'm out of here. What is your problem with me? I understand the outcome. So another tool we use is clear agreement. Make, you know, be clear. What is the big gripe everybody has about their manager? Unclear expectations. Okay, let's make a clear agreement. Why are you writing this down? Don't you trust me? No, I don't trust me. I don't know. I think you can read my mind. So we put clear agreement in place so they can own it fully, ask their questions, take risks. I'll block and tackle, but if you own this fully and you know what your authority is to do it, good delegation, all those things, you know, it's risky. So the component there is empowerment, creating an environment of empowerment.
Well, and to that, if I can interrupt, I'm an interrupter. One of the things that used to drive me bonkers about one of my previous chamber CEOs was she... And apologies in advance if you disagree. She used to always tell us, well, I lead from behind. What are you talking about, you lead from behind? I need a leader who leads. And I think from her point of view, leading from behind meant that she didn't take the kudos for other people's work, but then she also sat back and did next to nothing. And for her, she was allowing people to rise to the occasion and all of these different things. And I was just like, the whole time, and at that point I was just in my early 30s, and I was just like, this is complete bull wonky. Like, you are just setting yourself up to not take accountability for anything because your staff is the one that's supposed to be running everything. And we used to internally, myself and my manager, would just be like, everything that happens is in spite of her, not because of her. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that taught me that I then have carried through and I feel pretty good about is I would never ask Stephanie to do something that I would not myself be willing to do. We all take out the trash. We all do the dishes. We all, like, it doesn't matter what the task is. We could do it as a team, but... Do people often tell you things like, I lead from behind?
There's so many spins to that. But the point for me in that is there is a horrible dearth in leadership. People need leadership. And they have to make a distinction between managing and leading and hierarchical and team. And what am I in here? So I lead from behind, or you are empowered to do this. Like, what does that even mean? So getting to a baseline of a culture of accountability makes all that sort of move out of the way. But yes, it's like, I don't even know what you mean about you're leading from behind. And I have this picture in my head of someone with their boot in my rear end pushing, and not necessarily my, you know, idea of good leadership. But there is this dearth in leadership, and my current anxiety is around the fact that I'm watching in society and in the organizations I work in until I have a chance to, you know, get them grounded. Not being accountable gets rewarded more than being accountable. Mm-hmm. And all of us can be complicit unconsciously just by something as simple as it's easier to do it myself. So when, you know, I just take care of it, it's just easier to do it myself. and work around something, it rewards the unaccountable over and over. And then take that to the highest level of a CEO who takes a role, but in their pay package is how much they'll be paid if they fail to get out. That's up front, that they know that up front. And it's like not being accountable gets rewarded more than being accountable. That's where I think we hit our tipping point, and that each of us has to, you know, say, if I want them to be more accountable, I got to look at where am I complicit and what am I willing to give up to say, you know, that gravy train's over. We got to be done. So I'm, my fingers crossed. The energy I have comes from when I do get in these organizations, and it does work. And my job is to create not being needed as quickly as possible as a consultant, as a coach. It's like I can see from the assessment we're going to start. This is, these are the choices you're going to have to make once you're educated. Make them, don't make them. But when they make them, it's fun. I mean, it's not magic, that's for sure. But it is startling to see the difference between an accountable culture and one that is doing whatever they do. It's very expensive to run an organization that needs a lot of managing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's my current desire is, and I really enjoy working in entrepreneurial ventures and why I want to teach future entrepreneurs what is accountability. So it's not just a word in calligraphy as one of your values. It's truly embedded to a place you can't go back from. And you can't compete with it. When you get to that 85% solution in your organization, it is almost impossible to compete with it. And people say, "How do you? What are you doing?" Oh, this lady came in. She's kind of tough, but she gets to it. And, you know, accountability coaching, there's Kleenex involved for some, for sure. You know, that one of the chapters is my husband thinks my job is to make grown men cry. And it's like, I'm just asking questions.
So there's no crying in baseball, but there is possibly crying in accountability.
There's definitely crying in accountability.
I'm speechless just because I just think this is all so fascinating and amazing. And one thing, you mentioned that one of your goals or parts of your job is to be, you know, kind of unneeded as quickly as possible, but I would assume that this might be one of those things where people might feel like the change of mindset or becoming accountable in a true sense of the word is something that they can kind of do in a session or two, but it feels like that's got to be more of a process. Like, one thing I learned is when you do take over a company, whatever it took them to do, whatever is not working in a company, however long it took them to become not working, it takes twice as long to turn it around and make it work. What do you find in what you're doing? Like, how is it just purely on the person about how much they internalize it and turn around, or do people want quick results and you're like, wait, well, we've got to change your mindset?
You know, I get that question, how long does it take to change a culture? And my answer is as long as it takes people to change their mind. So the beliefs, attitudes, practices, and policies of a group of people, beliefs, attitudes, practices, and policies of a group of people is culture. That's what culture is. So when someone says, you know what, you need to change your attitude, and you say, yeah, absolutely, let me jump on that for you right now. The assessment gives them a picture of it in a snapshot. So they, what do you mean around accountability? You got to change your attitude. I don't even know what it is. So I can show you a picture of where it's problematic for you. It's private. It's personal. Take the assessment. And they're like, can you tell all of that from, yes, because you're telling me how you think. And that's very personal and should be kept between you and what you're looking at. So you can make some decisions about what tools are going to help you different than the person next to you. So we have that. How long does it take to change a culture? As long as it takes people to change their mind. So I'm not of the mind that it takes years to get where we are. You can change it very quickly. That's why I have a lot of success in what I'm doing. The challenge then becomes, how do you attract people who are about to get on the autobahn of accountability in your organization, who've been used to the, you know, dragging slow to react organization? Well, then you have a new problem. You've got to onboard them being ready for getting on this low stress productive job satisfaction. So we're going to talk to Not About. We're not going to have meeting after the meeting, and we're not going to rescue, fix, and save underperformance. Welcome to our organization.
And with that,
boom.
Thank you, Linda Galindo, for that amazing conversation. Cosign, hope you have an amazing weekend. Thank you for being with us. And with that, take it away, Frank.